Back Badgers. We're sat at the highest point ever in the history of Hoylake. We're on the top of the tallest grandstand behind the Championship 6 green, and I'm sat with the most tired looking James Bledge I've ever seen.
I'm doing good. I slept more last night than I've slept over the last few days, so you know, I'm beginning to recuperate.
You're starting a bit of life back in those eyes now.
Moisturiser. Back in the moisturiser. But it's, I mean, this is a stunning view up here. It's the first time I've been up the back of 6 Grandstand. We're in row Z. It's a beautiful 360 view of the course. I mean, I can't actually believe how high up we are.
The sun's setting over the estuary and the wind's blowing, so in classic Badgers form, there might be a bit of background noise.
I mean, we could have had this weather yesterday.
Instead, we had the pouring rain.
I think in the whole 19 months I think I've been here now, yesterday was the worst weather I'd seen in the whole 19 months.
Really?
Horrendous.
Yeah, I mean, it was biblically bad. How much rain fell yesterday?
33 mil, but sideways.
Yeah.
I mean, myself and Mr. Beggs were walking up the third fairway at 5:30 in the morning, and fighting it, and it got dry for a bit, and then it just absolutely came down. I mean, for the prize giving presentation, I mean, it was just horrendous, absolutely horrendous. You can't, all the photographs that were taken looked like they've been taken with a shaky hand because there's that much rain in front of them, you know.
No, it was a massive shame, but you know, we can't let it dampen what was an amazing week. So
it was super. It was a great week. We've I think the team knocked out the park with the course conditioning, with the volunteer team and the Royal Liverpool team working together. It was amazing. And I was thoroughly delighted. It was a great success overall, and I think it really showed everyone what an epic golf course Hoylake is.
Well, can we go through it, Bledge? So if we reflect over the couple of weeks, really, the championship, the build-up, the final run-in before it, and then the week of the championship, the practice days and the tournament itself. So member play stopped on the 3rd of July.
Yes.
And then what happened?
We had 2 weeks of prep, so we had a volunteer team come in from all the open courses that helped us, and we could up the cutting then, so we were cutting surfaces a lot more. And then we had the prep week the week before when the R&A agronomists come in, and then we really dial in the surfaces to the point where we were not kicking the backside off, getting the kind of speeds we wanted in the greens. And then the Sunday before, so a week before, that was our first practice run with the full team, everyone doing what they're meant to be doing. So that Sunday was probably the most hectic because you had guys that had never met each other before, that hadn't used certain machines before, and hadn't seen the course, so it was quite difficult. But we had a great plan in place with team leaders and radio systems that we could communicate, and everyone managed to get round. I mean, it wasn't without its kind of hiccups, and we did polish them out. And just like the golfer, you need 4 days to practice your routines on course setup. The same, and by the time the Thursday came, we were flying. In fact, the Sunday of was, even though it was the worst weather conditions, it was one of the nicest setups. So we had all great green speeds and great firmness. You know, greens were all 10'6", 10'7". There was some 10'8", but we had them all within a couple of inches of each other. You know, they were good firmness throughout the whole week. They performed amazingly, and even through the deluge, two puddles in the course behind the second green and behind on the ninth path. So
yeah, amazing with the conditions, the weather that you had. But it was all four seasons, really, wasn't it? Because the first 2 days were beautiful. It was a bit of wind, but the sun was shining and it was nice, and it proved to be a good test.
Yeah, it test was for lovely them. And warm, yeah, as well. So
you got your volunteer team in, Bledge, and you said about new machinery. So what do you use to what were you using to cut the greens? What were you using to mow the fairways?
So from tees, we were using hand mowers with three guys cutting the tees by hand. We had a team of 8 people.
Single cuts?
Single cut in the tees, yeah. Block cutting, reversing each day, so clockwise, anti-clockwise, clockwise, etc. So there was no stripes, didn't want any stripes in the course. You know, it needs to look as natural as possible. And then on the fairways and paths, we'd have 8 guys in John Deere Fairway Moore 7500s. We had 4 guys cutting, and then we had 12 guys, so 6 teams of 2, cutting the greens by hand. So they would cut the green, sit to the side, wait for the RNA to stimp it to make sure it was within the parameters, and if it was too slow, then we would cut again. I mean, there's greens here that perform a bit differently. We've got newer sets of greens, i.e. 1, 2, here we go, 1, 2, I'm thinking Rootens, 1, 2, 4, 5, 7,
correct.
17.
Keep going.
Yeah. So they, more often than not, just needed one cut and just sometimes didn't need cut at night, whereas a lot of the, we have a run of greens like 8, 9, 10 double cuts and 18 triple cuts quite often because of being in the grandstand, it was no air movement. But we wanted to keep cutting the greens all the time, you know, so more cuts, the smoother they were and the denser they were, and we really got them beautiful by the Sunday. Well, we got them beautiful from the start, to be honest.
No, they looked immaculate, and you got so many nice comments, didn't you, about how good the greens were, and deservedly so. But some of those greens, it's interesting, the ones that performed a little worse were, well, they're arguably some of our better greens design-wise on the golf course. They're the ones done by Harry Colt in the 1920s. And it's interesting talking to Alistair, because those greens are built with a layer of clay underneath the surface, aren't they?
Yeah, dew ponds, aren't they? You know, we're days without irrigation systems when they wanted to
keep the water up by the roots.
Yeah, and now it's going to paint our detriment, but it's something we need to look at in the future. I mean, it's small margins, but when you're kind of trying to set up a golf course to this level, and it's something that we kind of... It does concern us a little bit.
So what kind of levels of moisture were you dealing with by the end of the week in the greens?
We were probably up in about 30 by the end of the week. I mean, we did, and one of the nights they were down about 15 and they were clegging at 120. So, I mean, we were right on the button there, and a couple more dry days, it would have been even better. So they do perform fantastically well. And even the older greens, I mean, they're still good enough, you know. There's no issue. It's not like we need to go and, like, get the diggers out straight away. You know, there's maybe something in the future that we might want to look at. But I mean,
because you put a lot of sand into all of the greens here, haven't you, since you arrived?
Yeah, but I guess it's the issues are deeper down than that. You know, the sand we're putting into the greens is 20-80 mil. But I mean, you're talking, these dew ponds were probably a couple of feet down, I would have thought.
Yeah.
We should dig one up one day. We'll go out with a spade tonight and dig it up.
First day back of play for them, get the course back now.
And yeah, that's it, they're all in their droves now. Normal players resumed. But going back to the set, we also had 6 guys on bunkers and 2 on holes, painting, changing holes. But the bunkers were probably the area that took the most amount of work.
Can we talk about that Thursday night?
No, I don't think it was just a storm in a teacup. The bunkers needed to be set up penally, you know.
So if there was any chance that anyone missed that, of course there was a story there where all the bunkers were raked particularly flat, and then a few people playing backwards and sideways and having a little mare and having a little strop, weren't they?
Well, we all know that, I mean, I'm probably very unpopular amongst the professional fraternity for saying this, but it's a hazard at the end of the day, and this is the Open Championship. You know where the bunkers are. The whole idea of the game is not to go in the bunkers, and it splits the field more, and it's more exciting when people are taking 2 or 3 shots to get out of the bunkers. You know, you don't want to see John Rahm hit it in a bunker and then just blast a sandwich straight onto the green. It needs to be up against the face, and we rate them completely different for members, and this week we'll start to return them. But yeah, I just think just a bit much, really.
It was interesting watching that from a... Normally, like you say, the pros almost play for the bunkers sometimes, don't they? And they certainly don't fear them. And it was nice to watch them really think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we got it right with the setup with the bunkers, definitely.
How much work was that for you, though, to go and change that?
Well, we didn't really change anything, you know. There was a small bowl, maybe just to release the ball back a couple of inches from the face. These are the things that greenkeepers change daily. You know, it's not a big deal. It's not like, I think maybe the kind of news story was that as if we went back out and ate humble pie and then started piling all the sand up against the faces. But you can look at them now. They're pretty much like the average golfer would not see a single bit of difference. No one would have known they were done. It was very minimal, you know, just to try to make it a touch fairer so they had more of a chance of getting out as opposed to zero chance.
Yeah. So what did your week involve really, Bledge? Talk us through that, because obviously you had a big team, much bigger team than you might have on a normal daily basis.
Yeah, we went from 12 staff to 45. The normal day for us would just be myself and Alistair would sweep the course, and we'd walk side to side up the fairways and check every bunker, check all the fairways that had been divoted, and you would miss the odd one the night before and would call guys back in the morning that were divot sweeping, just to make sure every single divot was filled, make sure every single bunker was perfect. You know, there was no stone left unturned, and having a couple of guys cast their eye over that, then you're setting up the golf course to the best of your ability. So that was our job, looking at the data, any decisions and whether it should be cut again or.
And what time were you doing that? So
my alarm would go at 3:30. I'd get up, clean my teeth, go straight into the office, print off the worksheet, and then greet the guys at 4 o'clock, and then about. I'd make myself a coffee, and then about 20 past four, I'd wander out onto the chipping green, meet Ali, where the putting green would already have been stimped about 5 o'clock, and then we would make a decision what we're doing after that.
So who's doing that? Would that be?
So the Arne guys. There's two Arne agronomists that were doing that, and we also had a couple of Arne scholars that were taking from this and moisture readings. And they were fantastic all week. It was a great team effort, you know, and I think that was the kind of the key to it. We had, obviously, you were at the party we had last night in the tent that we made, the marquee at the side of the shed, and it was great with Jim Croxon from Bigger was there, and my wife and the kids and the dogs and both sets of teams. And it was a great vibe down there. It was proper party atmosphere. A couple of boys had Hawaiian shirts on, I noticed, and there was some great friendships made. I mean, it was really super for me to kind of look around and see guys like with their arms around each other that only met each other under a week ago, and that's special, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, real camaraderie over the week.
And the young guys really impressed me. The three guys, Greg, Sam, and Max from the apprentice competition we did. They were different class. They were really good. So I enjoyed that.
And the connections they made and the things they. I was talking to Max last night, and he was saying he's been messaging Dave Edmondson up at Prestwick every day with you know, the things that he's learned and the people that he's met, and he's excited to go and share some of the things, and of course the Open next year is just down the road from him, mm-hmm. down at Troon, so I'm sure he'll be trying his best to do the same thing next year.
Yeah, these things like this that give you the bug, make you want to do more, and he'll go into bigger and better things. They all will, and that's the kind of thing Dave would want from as well, and that's why Dave's encouraged him so much to take that on. So yeah, it's super, it really is, and a lot of guys are friends for life after this weekend. It's just so strange kind of sitting up here looking across the hole, but knowing that that's it over. But to be honest, so we did Sunday set up and Monday set up last week, and I was like, we've still got two practice days to go. And then it's like when you go to a music festival and you've done yourself in the first night, and you're like, we've still got two or three nights to go. How am I going to get through this?
So how did the rest of your day look? So you were there and you'd gone and done your team briefing. At what time was that? 5 o'clock?
That was 4 o'clock in the morning. 4 o'clock. And the guys kind of started cutting just about 4:30. We started stimping at 5. We did our course walk, finished about 9:30. Me and Ali would then grab a coffee, crunch the data. And then we'd have free time, so I'd go and meet the lads at the Lynx Pavilion for breakfast. And then I always have an earpiece in because I couldn't go back to bed. I was really tired, but I was never at a point where I knew I could sleep. I did try and lay down a few times, but there's so much noise outside the house. I mean, obviously I live on site. and you can hear roars going up at the greens. It's amazing. And I've just got massive FOMO. I didn't want to miss a single thing. Anytime you're sleeping, what a waste, what wasted time that is. So I went out, watched a bit of golf across at the range, and I looked around the Titleist Tour van. We're on the Sky Open Zone.
So the middle of the day, your job is done. You're just...
Well, it isn't. I'm on call. So I had quite frequent call-outs, to be honest. You know, I would be... Marshals would call in the fact that someone's tripped over a tree stump or whatever, because there's that many people walking that little tree stumps maybe were being revealed.
50,000 people. I mean, we're looking around from up here, and I'm actually looking at the hill behind the sixth screen, between that and the 14th tee, and you can see things that you just don't normally see. Like, can you see that old tee, Bledge?
Whereabouts?
So if you look just behind, so almost directly between, you can see there's an old rectangle tree. That's normally covered over with long grass. You never see it, but because they've had 47
Did you know that
and a
was
half,
there? Did you?
Yeah, well, I knew that they used to play down what was members' fifth from there. But then they also then used it latterly for members' 12-hole championship 14. So it's had two different lives, but the hole that was here... But, you know, I didn't know exactly where it was.
It's a lot better where it is now, isn't it, when you look at it?
Oh, well, exactly. The course has evolved so much. That was a real talking point of the week. But you do spot these things that otherwise you don't see. But to your point, you know, 50,000 people walking around the golf course, and they did rather well to the course, which yesterday... The amount of water that fell was
It looked really
unbelievable.
Muddy. It looked like Glastonbury yesterday.
And then walking around
so
today, it's fine.
It's not as bad. These muddy paths actually look all right.
I didn't know how you were going to sort out like the bit between Championship 1 and Championship 18.
That was particularly bad. But it's... you know, it's not for worrying about just now. When the autumn comes, we just need to kind of take stock. I'm going to have to look at my budget, see how much seed I can buy. We're going to have to get the ecologist in to kind of see what he advises on doing certain work in the dunes, if we're going to overseed there or not. But yeah, there's a lot to be done this year, and it's I would never say I'm glad it's over, but it's nice that we've completed it successfully.
Are you glad it happened and happened so well? Without any dramas,
exactly
without any hiccups.
I mean, we didn't have any major hiccups. The machinery went well, all the staff went well, everyone's health was great. There was no kind of major dramas on the course. There was a report that there was a nutterjack toad on 13.
And, oh, I saw a tweet about that, and you're the designated toad handler.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a common because it was leaping about the bit. Nutterjacks like run from side to side.
Okay.
So it definitely wasn't, but the all... I also enjoyed it. There was Paul Eisinger had said on the NBC or whatever channel he's on that it was I ruined the bunkers or something like that, which is quite funny.
Yeah, but some other people said that it was the best greens that they've seen. And
I thought it was funny that he said that. It made me laugh. It's just banter. It's good. The comments we got from all the golfers was fantastic. It was really good. And I mean, last night was really surreal for me to actually sit and chat with Brian Harman whilst he was holding the claret jug about his round and about the course, and he was just full of praise for the place, which was really brilliant. And I think the thing that's been the best for me is, and it's completely overwhelming, I don't even know where to start, is the amount of messages I've got, whether it be text or WhatsApps or emails.
So if someone's listening to this podcast and you haven't replied to them, don't take it personally.
I will get round to it.
Might take you till Christmas.
Honestly, you wouldn't believe it. And I want to thank everyone for that, because the support's been tremendous. And I know a lot of my good friends listen to this podcast, and I will get round to it. But today I was trying to sort out bunker bins, take a drone landing pad off the beach, and now me and you are out swapping the flags over, and then we decided just to quickly get the microphones out. So I will get there soon. I also need to get to my bed.
Yeah, you do need to get to your bed. But before you do, tell us about the presentation ceremony. And it was a shame it was honking down with rain, but, you know, that aside, that must have been a great experience.
Yeah, it was it was unreal. I mean, at one point I was in the card signing room with Brian Harman, and John Rahm comes in and gives Brian a hug in front of us. And then...
we get walked out. Martin Slumbers walks out with the Clark jug, and we walk out in a line in front of thousands of people, and millions of, I mean, I don't know, there's the stats, 600 odd million people or something like that on telly. And David Meacher's joked for a while that he was going to, he couldn't call me Bledge.
I tried to get him to come down at our place for friends and whatever. David came and I was trying my best to get him to call you Bledge. He said he's been calling you James all week.
Yes, he has.
So that he doesn't
accidentally. Bledge
ever since, yeah, yeah. So that he doesn't accidentally do it.
He can go back to Bledge now, which is good. But he's the nicest guy on the planet. I absolutely loved our meetings with him at night. You know, he always greeted us with a big smile. He's the most positive person, and yeah, he was super fun. It was really great. All the Arne guys have been a joy to work with, like from agronomy through infrastructure, and a building a championship like this works so well because there's that many people that work in great roles for them. Things get done, and they get done well. We communicate well. There's no arguing about stuff. It's just class. So I don't want to curse it now because we've still got all this to come down, but I hope it continues.
Yeah, looking around, it is insane how big it is as a site, isn't it? Well, the infrastructure, there's a 3-story corporate hospitality tent over there and the 2-story Loch Lomond whiskey thing and the grandstand itself around 18, all of these other ones and the shop. Which is, I had a little walk around and
I bought dog leads, 2 dog leads.
I think everything there was slightly outside of my price range.
They were, but I didn't. I thought, well, the dogs deserve. The dogs actually got quite a lot of airtime on Sky.
It was Stevie's birthday, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Beef Cheeks, we're calling her. Stevie and Susie were on Andrew Coltart, talked about them, and they put a picture on, which was amazing. But it's just, that's, I mean, it's surreal for me being such a golf badger to be able to experience all that. Is something I'll never forget. It's been worth all the kind of, if there's any hardships we've had since being here, tough times, it's been completely worth it for that this week.
And Jenny and the kids, do they enjoy it
absolutely,
as much as you did?
Absolutely loved it. Mum and Dad loved it. They sat up all day on the 17th Green Grandstand on the Friday. They saw a hole-in-one. Was it Thursday, maybe? Thursday was a hole-in-one. So they saw a hole-in-one, or Friday, a hole-in-one and a protester. So they had the best day of their lives.
Tell you what, was that Billy Horschel stop?
It was, yes.
What a legend. I mean, I think everyone was probably expecting something, weren't they? So
yeah, I know, we always were. Like, I mean, they failed big time, so that was great.
Yeah, 2006, we've had one already, so we don't need another one. But it's freezing cold up here now, Bledge. The sun's dipped
it's
down.
Windy.
So I think, why don't we leave it there? 20 minutes of this
catch-up. I think we've still got some work to do, Sam, as well. You need to
get these flags in. Flags to change. So we'll go and change these flags. And thanks for listening. And we'll do a proper debrief when we're sat somewhere in the warmth and the dust has settled.
I think we could probably do a question and answer session at some point as well.
Yeah, possibly. Good idea. Good idea.
And then we can put it to bed forever. And we get back on with proper podcasting.
Proper guests. Well, thanks very much for listening. Thanks for tuning into this short episode. But Bledge, well done, mate. You did us all proud at Hoylake.
Thank you very much.